Earth is fake. Big net. No clue. Steve's book. Podcast. Muskie. Muskie. Muskie.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. A J Bird.
Steve, happy Memorial Day.
Happy Memorial Day. You know what? I like the spirit of the holiday.
Yeah.
But, oh, I've gotten the beating of the week the last 2 days.
But you don't like the traffic.
Oh, well, yesterday was driving around in a washing machine. It was just so many friggin' boats, man. It was unbelievable. And the wake boats.
Oh, just
boats,
throwing cross wake everywhere.
Yeah,
at you.
You got jet skis, you got freaking wake boats, you got. So I'll tell you something insulting, right?
Yeah.
Got these guys down there fishing with me. This is the only time they could do it. I warned them. I try to avoid the holidays like the plague, but they wanted to go. I was like, okay. So we make this big run down lake and just take the beat. I mean, you needed your musky fishing helmet on for that ride, right?
Okay.
Get your mouth guard out, right? Everybody put your mouth guard in. We're going for a ride. So we finally get there, and I've said every word in the book, Jay. Just frickin' frack and, you know, oh shucks, things of that nature. And I'm dodging people. I'm looking for swimmers, you know, or just zany, wild and wacky stuff. We get down this place and said, okay, we're past these people. And I told him, I said, all right, we're going to pull into this bay. It'll be chill. We'll get in here and fish. I pull around the corner and there's a pontoon boat with a guy skiing through the weed bed, Jay. It's like, that's on my life. Like, this guy's like, we're in a life vest, skiing through the weed bed I just drove 20 minutes to get to. I was trying to get away from everybody, and he just comes through like a total jackhole. Look at me, I'm skiing. So I murdered him and dumped him in the lake. Okay, I probably shouldn't say that on a show, but nobody narked me out. I'm teasing. Wanted to. No, it was funny. It was just absolutely infuriating, Jay. It was hilarious, though.
Yeah.
And just running around, running amok, and then people tied up. And we're able to get the bites, but I'll tell you, it's we've talked about in the past, and it's going to happen. It's going to happen more and more and more the warmer it gets, boat traffic. If you've got something that's chopped up, a lot of times those fish are going to hold tight off the bottom. That's what I was able to make work. It's like, okay, let's get down and dirty, right? If it's extreme wake or things that are not typical on your body of water, if you see like a heightened level activity, a lot of waterways where the fish are accustomed to a lot of boat traffic, they're not fazed by it. But this was enough to sort of shift the lake up. We're talking Memorial Day week.
Right. They might shift to like the bottom of the weeds, the outside of the weed edge versus
our first break.
The bottom, on that lake where they're more accustomed to it.
Just
we've seen that.
Yeah, they're going to exactly hunker down a little bit. They'll still eat, but it was it was nautical by nature. I'll tell you that much. I was freaking. I literally have this sore spot in my neck from whipping around in the boat, Jay. And it was like, bah, bah, bah. You're just flinging around like ragdolls. Then today, it was amazing, right? I actually called you, launched, everything's good. We're going, got a bite, had one come off. And you're like, okay, it's early in the day. We'll have another chance. And there's zero like chance of a thunderstorm. All these idiots are out on the water. Not, you know, same idiots, same stuff, right? Same garbage. Bunch of idiots out on the water. And here comes a cloud blacker than your heart, Jay. Comes rolling
the
up.
The forecast is 0% chance. Been there. Yes, yeah. Been
and
there.
Here
okay.
Came just
and here it is.
The most brutal ass beating of hail I've ever taken. I was downstream. We had to run for 30 minutes. And I couldn't get past it. Right, and I was too afraid to drop by, like, let it go over. Oh, just pounded. I got hit with hail so hard I got a nosebleed, Jay. That was cool. Mm. Right in the freaking schnauzer. Just freaking driving down the lake like an idiot. It's bouncing off the boat. What was awesome, though, is watching everyone else freak out. So, like, if you can imagine being the couple. Here it is, the lake and everything's the washing machine. It's just hell on earth out there. And be the couple in the John boat with the five horse, right? Oh, let's go out. And you see them, and you're like, oh, you're a fool. Or the people in kayaks. There are people in kayaks, Jay. I saw paddle boarders. And they're just getting annihilated.
Awesome. So, and you're hightailing out of there, blowing by them, right. And you're just looking back at you going,
oh, look,
they're all going,
It's like, it was like running, like you just look over your shoulder and see the people that are being taken down by the zombie horde, right? You go, every man for themselves, mother, you know? So I felt bad, but it was funny. I mean, there's people in John boats, like I said, kayakers out there. You know, half the people you pass are wearing Dolly Partons, the big orange life vest, you know? And it was a beating of the week, dude. It was kind of spectacular. Yeah.
You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, well, you know what? You get what you deserve when you go out on the holiday weekend. And speaking of the weekend, Jay, not the artist, the actual weekend, you said it's been wild and wacky up in the Northwoods. What's cooking up there?
Yeah, well, more of the same. Yeah, there's boats out. Everyone's, relatively good weather. It's not warm here, but a little rain today. Perfect fishing rain. I know neighbor Steve went out for a while this morning before it started raining. Mm-hmm. And I fished a little bit yesterday, went to a little lake. Actually, it was extremely windy, you know, my little boat. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do some trolling passes on some, weed lines here. And I'm like, oh man, I've had enough of this. I got to get out of here.
What did you say? It was blowing like 30.
It was blowing 30 yesterday.
Yeah.
The gusts were just awful. So.
Yeah. Real 30 sucks. Yeah,
tomorrow's a new day. So,
well, is it though?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it's going to be exciting to hear some more feedback. I've heard some people catching some fish, and then obviously we'll get the feedback. If you didn't notice, Josh Krieger's back in the saddle again.
Yeah.
With the Northwoods Fishing Report. So you can get it there on the app every week. Basically now until fall, it'll give you the heads up if you're heading to the Northwoods. Oh. If you're up there looking for a fat muskie and a cheese curd queen down at the local bar, Josh has got you covered. He does both kinds of tips. You know that, right?
He does everything. Yeah.
He covers everything from big girls to fat girls and everything in between.
And heck of a fishing forecast and, you know, recap too.
You know, what more could you ask for?
Lots of information.
Mm-hmm. On you know, it's like in country and Western music, Jay.
Is it?
Yeah, he's got all your bases covered there. So the Northwoods Fishing Report, it's on the app there. You can check that out. I'll tell you, I'm just rambling, but it's been a crazy week, Jay. I actually called Jay this week, and there's something I just wanted to convey about observational stuff, you know. I actually called you. I called Dr. Bob, had some thoughts. Had one of the best days I've ever had on the water ever, Jay. You know that. I'll leave the gory details out, right? It's not about this or about that or what happened, but just as far as like size class of fish and the amount of big fish in a super truncated period of time, right? So stumbled into something that kind of blew my mind, and I don't even think I've conveyed to you yet, but one of the oddest things that I learned this week is the importance of understanding what's taking place. I mean, I've tried to convey that we need to understand what's happening pattern-wise. We need to have a keen eye set on an understanding of the when, where, and why. You know, and often for me, I spend far more time dissecting a successful day than anything. I'm not like reveling in success by any means. Like, oh man, you know, like, and Jay, you can convey, like, me and you're just bullshitting on the phone. I'm not calling you up going, man, I kicked some serious ass, you know. It's more about unpacking a pattern, right? Or unpacking a scenario and going, okay, how can I do this again? Or how can I have a deeper understanding of what happened? And I'll tell you, it was an interesting little thing. Got three serious, like the ones everybody wants in an hour. And what I learned this week was crazy because I fished this one little section, this one bay. And, well, let me back this up and start with this. Hadn't seen anything all day, right? It just is what it is, not moving anything. It happens, believe it or not. I'm doing everything I can. I've done my three-point bait check, which I literally do. We talk about that in the Next Level Muskie Fish in the book. And it's how I get consistency going and understanding what's taking place. You know, you got to have something consistent. So you go X, Y, and Z, and you can add it up. Well, everything was pointing towards, and let me back it up one more step and saying, my bait check and conditions were pointing towards a very like mid water column bite, right?
Okay.
All the slow gliders, maybe a crack and maybe a swim bait, slow rolling spinner baits, but not bottom type. But we should be able to find a active muskie in the mid water column, right? The conditions are like kind of these big puffy clouds, this, that, and the other.
Oh, okay.
You know, like middle. Meh.
It was partly cloudy, and there's big puffy clouds.
Yeah, what was
the wind direction?
It was blowing west or out of the west, but it was blowing. Okay. It was negligible. When you ask about wind, but just one of these days where you go, nah, nothing special about it, right? There's just a nah kind of day. Anyway, not making any, you know what I'm talking about.
Meh. Yeah, right.
You're driving there, you're not really excited, but you're not down in the dumps. You know, you're just, meh. What? Sort of like Jay's prom date. Meh. Anyway, so I'm going over there. But something that happened is something I never accounted for. Anyway, pulling to a bay, kind of taking a regrouping moment. I'm going to gnaw on a sandwich real quick and get my head straightened out, right? Well, client does their thing. They're gnawing around. And I make one cast, boom, and get smoked, Jay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Monster, boom, in the net. Repeat it a couple more times, a little more action. Wham, 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 wham. Something that I noticed when I came into this area, it was devoid of bait. There was nothing saying, hey, this is where you need to be right now. You know, I pulled in. Well, I scratched my head for a day, sort of beat my head off the wall, called Dr. Bob, talked to you. I could not explain what had happened. Now, why were the muskies there? There were no bait fish. I scanned around the lake, couldn't find anything going on that made any logical sense as far as like, okay, there's crappie, there's bluegill, there's shad, there's walleye, there's sucker. What's going on here, right? Why were they here? What was the logical pattern? Well, come back the next day, and I brought a small net. You know, like a pond skimmer net, Jay, like something you clean a pond out or a pool net.
Okay.
Got in that back bay, I pulled up more big crayfish than you could imagine. And the only thing that makes sense with that bite that I ran into, that muskies were exploiting the space, the frigging crayfish spawn. Right? And it's something that I think is often overlooked, is their propensity to always be on what the easiest forage base is. We say it all the time. At this point, spawning crayfish would be the easiest pickup you could get. And it's sort of tilted my head to go, all right, always having your mind tuned to what that easiest opportunity is. And there's a lot of variables to take in consideration, you know, panfish spawning habits, walleye spawning habits, blah, 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 blah. But I bring this up just for the sake of keeping in mind, in the spring, in the early season, everything has to go through its life cycle. And at certain points, it's not exactly what's kind of like the historical pattern, right? the historical pattern of, well, muskies go out, they spawn, they move in, they eat panfish and move back out. No, no, no. This was obvious. These were well above just trophies. And they were exploiting that heavily as a pack, right? So a keen eye on forage, a keen eye on what's happening, because that would have been one of those days. Had I not kind of dumbed into that, which I did, admittedly so, I dumbed into it. Just pulled in the bay to eat a sandwich and then looked like a superstar. You know, didn't deserve it, but it happened. But dissecting that situation and going back the first day, you know, now, mind you, but giant caveat, you know, did I figure this out that day? No, the next morning I did. So, yes, there's a time lapse, but I doubt all these things moved in there and blah, blah, blah. But I had to understand what happened. Now, yet again, I've learned something by going, holy crap, there's a crayfish spawn, which I never accounted for. So you have crayfish darting around left and right. You got scuds of food, Jay. Easy to get, right? High caloric intake. And of course, the biggest of the big muskies are going to use that.
Mm.
And the only thought that I have, and the reason I brought this up, is to just put it in folks' mind where, you know, A, if you run into something and it doesn't make sense, figure it out till you figure it out. There's a logical solution here. There's a reason, right? Followed by, not everything has to be this simple forage movement of one species, right? Because I deal with so many different species of fish, from shad to walleye, and walleye, sauger, you know, catfish, you name it, we got it, trout, all of them, right? You're trying to keep up with what's the easiest. And there's been times where I go, man, I'm really not seeing the action I want to see. What am I missing? Well, it could be crayfish. It could be, heck, frogs. It could, you know, there's a lot to take in, but there's a reason. There's always an easy forage base. And muskies always tend to do that. And I say that because, I mean, no matter what, Jay, you see the bug hatches, right?
Sure. Yep.
Bug hatches happen. Yeah, a bug hatch will happen. Well, the muskies, are they eating bugs? Well, probably little juveniles are. But that's going to shift the whole food chain. There are constant food chain shifts from every angle, right? Whether it be the muskies are responding directly to that prey, or they're responding to things that are predating on something, right? That's kind of the pattern in the spring. Once we get past that post-spawn, muskies are going to exploit that to the best of their ability. Just something worth looking at. Just a thought, you know. There's always a logical solution to why they were there. You know, I couldn't for the life of me figure it out. I basically was like running out the next morning going, I have to delve in deeper and get my head wrapped around it. But, you know, if you're up against the wall, think outside the box a little bit and go, what is happening, right? You've just always got to be looking. Anyway, I'll shut up, Jay. What's going on? There's one thing we should say, other than the comings and the goings at the muskie shop, which is it's busy.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's freaking, it's biz-tacular. Everybody's up there, Jay. How many fat heads you sell this week?
I couldn't even tell you, Steve. Crappie minnows have been popular. Crappie fishing right now this last week has been great.
Ooh, yeah. Fill the freezer, they say.
And bass fishing, yeah.
Do you want the hardest?
But now muskie's open. Muskie season is finally open. So,
do you want the hardest part of bass fishing is, Jay?
Yeah, I know what you're going to say.
I don't think
breaking it to your parents.
Breaking it to, yeah, telling your parents you.
Yeah.
You're, okay. Anyway, nonetheless. Yeah. Did know something cool. We have the Shimano Trinx 400 with a power handle. Explain what's going on there, Jace, for your Trinx aficionados.
Yeah, it's the standard gear Trinx, one of the best-selling reels out there. Problem being, it only comes with a paddle handle, you know, the double deal. So
double
we
deal.
Have them. We got them made with power handles, the single power cranks, which seems to be what everyone wants. So they come with it, and it's the same price as the normal one. So
oh yeah, everybody buys a Trinx with the man.
And then
I
they get a or look for a power handle if they're available. You know, they're not always available from Shimano. So,
well, I'm kind of
the authentic part.
I'm kind of miffed right now because all my 400s have an aftermarket until they're, because you get the only time you get a power handle is the high gear.
Correct. The only the high gear, right? The one that has 40 inches per crank. So that's a great seller too. Great reel.
But I hate.
Do you prefer power handles on everything?
Oh,
now?
I freaking hate paddle handles now.
Even the real wide ones.
What do you mean? Oh,
you know the ones that have a good width to them. You know,
I do. I hate them. I just do.
Okay.
I mean, I hate to say that. That's just where I'm at. It is. Yeah. It is. It. Even when I was throwing the Abus, right? That's crazy. Like the proliferation of super reels. Basically, I mean, Jay, if you think about it, when we started the podcast, it wasn't the craziest thing on earth to be thrown at Abu Garcia still. Yeah. I was on the cusp of it. I had like some Revos, but you know, now it's like you gotta be throwing a super reel. Even when I was throwing the round reels, which was standard forever. It was like wearing a potato off your belt, Jay. It was the fashion of the day. I had a power handle on those. Abu would make an aftermarket power handle. I got used to that. I can't stand paddle handles. Some guys swear by them. I don't know. What do you prefer? What's on yours? Do you have a power handle on yours?
On my main reel, I've got a dial with a power handle, but yeah, I mean, you get used to it. You know, fish for 5 minutes if you're used to paddle handles. I kind of like this. There's a balance thing too. You know, it's just, I don't know, it throws the equilibrium off on the reel. You know, it's just like all this weight's on one side. But if you got a really wide paddle handle, I would probably prefer that. Personally.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I like it when they're counterweighted. I can't see. I'm sitting here. I'm looking at that. There's a cool new reel, and something I'll say this is gear wise. There's the new Daiwa, the 500, right? I just shot Jay's working on the edit for the first video of the year.
Ooh, that'll be coming out soon. Yeah. Steve, I've been working on that all weekend.
Well, I got another one, another idea brewing here. But nonetheless, I've got that reel, and I think I can't see it. I'm so blind. It's ridiculous. But that
the new 500?
The 500, yeah, but I can't tell if it's counterweighted. I like the power handles that are counterweighted. Like my favorite reel of all time is the Abu Garcia Revo, the old ones, the white ones, right? Can't get them anymore. Those are antiquated at this point. I really like that 500 though, because I never liked the Trank 500. It's just too big of a platform for me. That's just too big of a reel, right? I'm just like, this is just over the top craziness. That dial was pretty interesting. It's about the size. If you set them side by side, Jay, it's like a tick bigger than a Komodo. Believe it or not, like the Kuma Komodo, like the 400 size, which is a big
fairly
reel.
Light reel for its size. Yeah,
they're just getting lighter. That's the one thing too is if you pick up the new reels. I don't know. I'm going down a reel thing, but if you pick up the newer reels versus like my Revos or the old beasts. Or like the red beasts, you go, whoa, that is a whole different animal. But now that's cool stuff. You got the power handle on that. So, no, you don't have to buy a power handle now. What do you know? Just do that. Yakety schmackety. The other thing that's of note, bunch of Lake X's in. You can still get your hands on that. I only mention that because it won't be long till it's all sold out. So...
They always go.
They go fast.
And they take a long time to get. And we got another shipment in, I wasn't thinking like Thursday or something like that, including some cannonballs. The biggest, well, not the Cannonball Junior, which
the
is
the cannonball.
Awesome side. The cannonball, all 9.2 ounces or whatever it is.
It's 11 inch.
An awesome wave, big water bait.
I'm telling you right now. I have a Cannonball Junior. It's sitting here in the bait cave hanging on the wall, and it's caught fish, the Junior, right? The Cannonball, I have seen it get blown out of the water. They catch fish. I wouldn't recommend it for three legs chain, Jay. That would be, I wouldn't take it to Webster in Indiana, But if you're fishing Canada, Canadian waters and in some big fish waters, it's worth giving a look. So that's cool. Anyway, goodness gracious. Down the proverbial rabbit hole. Jay, let's get to some Q&A here. Cover some stuff. Guys, got some questions. Got some answers. Anthony. Hey, guys, I'm wondering when and why you would use the tube, grub, or paddle tail with the Kraken. Are there specific conditions or scenarios that you feels like one option would really shine? I should also be able to get some fishing in soon and can't wait to try it out. I'm also psyched about the new format of videos. Cool. That's awesome. Yeah, we're as far as the videos, if you didn't hear last week's episode, not worried about doing weekly episodes. We're going to try to do monthly or bi-monthly, like not bi-monthly, but 1 to 2 hour long videos a month of some serious stuff of how do we catch more fish. So kind of like podcast in action, where it's like Jay's working on one, spoiler alert, but it's a rubber breakdown where, you know, I get in depth, but we do something I don't think anybody's ever done in another video. I won't say what that is, right?
Yeah, don't spoil it.
But we do some interesting things there, and just going to take things in depth. So just to help you catch some more fish. Okay, so thanks for that. All right, so there is the Kraken, and soon you'll be able to get the paddle and the grub tail. So with that, they're all it's three different, entirely different scenarios, right? So the grub tail makes it very a la, and I'll tell you my inspiration for that was the Phantom Hardhead.
Sure. Right?
You can't get it anymore. The Kraken just kind of loves that big grub tail on it, which is like a bulldog Medusa alternative. Right? It's a pull pause bait. So pull pause, ripping it like you do a big rubber bait, where obviously the Kraken was originally designed to have the tube-esque skirt. So we're going to work that on the deep edges in a tube up and down fashion. Then the grub tail will be pull pause like a bulldog Medusa, all your other stuff. And then the paddle tail, the round body of the Kraken eats it up alive. That thing just rolls. You know, everybody talks about belly roll on
crankbaits.
Swim baits, the way I'm getting at, because it's got the paddle tails. Oh, it's got a good belly roll. This thing just rolls great. It's got a really nice wobble to it, like a fat, almost, you know, way more swing than any other plastic swim bait I've seen. So you got the big plastic rear part, but you have the hard plastic front. And that was just kind of like, okay, well, if we're doing this other stuff, what would happen if? That was literally how that happened. Like, well, there's only so many rubber baits. So it's kind of going to turn into an all-in-one, to be honest with you. And it was never the intent. The Kraken's supposed to be a tube-esque, that up and down motion, but just the round platform and the adjustable weighting really turned into something unique, even more
yes,
so.
It did.
They're coming here soon. I know that much. I don't know when, you know, Livingston will get them here at some point, but, you know, when to use them. I mean, it's going to vary. I mean, if they're on pull pause jerk baits, I'm going with the grub, and you know, that deep probative nature of the up and down tube thing, that's going to be on a deeper edge where pull pause will be like deep, but not completely deep, and your paddle tail, heck of a follow up for bucktails. And the thing with the Kraken platform is you can adjust the weighting. So basically anywhere, when I was prototyping all this stuff, I had three of them running at a time over the winter, right? So I would have one person on a paddle and one on a grub and one on a pure up and down.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Okay.
And you basically had to spread from top to bottom.
Wow. Yeah.
And get smoked. And like I said, okay, instead of owning, it's the same crap I do with every bait. Nobody's caught on. Buy one bait and you can fish it in any scenario, because I'm sick of having 4 trillion baits in the boat, right? What's annoying as a guide, more so than anything, is you find the pattern, but you've got one of them, right? You got one, and it gets torn up, or you lose it, and you're like, whoa.
Right, you know? Bad scenario, absolutely.
But you might,
a lot of guides,
you go, oh, they're on, you know, big rubber, I'm not going to name names, but they're on a big rubber bait, but it needs extra weight to get it where it needs to be. and you lose it or it tears up and now you're just screwed. With the Kraken is like, I can add weight, subtract weight, and sort of cover anywhere in the water column. So if you're doing what we should be doing and fishing intelligently and thinking about all the factors, reading the water, the seasonality, what's going on with forage, blah, 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 blah. You can dial this thing into where muskie should be. That's the trick. So you're basically, if you've got a Kraken already here shortly, you'll be able to grab some extra tails and turn that thing in the paddle tail. Now, the cool thing is, like with the, when you run it with the paddle tail, that is the biggest, the paddle tail, like the actual round section, the back section of the paddle tail, mm-hmm. is the biggest paddle tail on the market. So, you know, there you go. It's a
that's an advantage too, Steve. With in terms of
big thump,
you know,
yeah,
being up the up the creek without a paddle, and it's just like, they really seem to be on white, and I just got bit off. It's just like, you know, we'll get the box out. You don't even have to take the bait off.
Yeah, just put the thing.
Place
on
the tail here. It's like, here, take that black tail off. Here, yeah. Try this white one. You know, it seems to be getting looks.
Have a handful. It's cool. I've gotten feedback too on people on the Kraken that have already caught fish. Right, because you know, the north is opening up, but everybody else south of you has already been fishing. We all know that, right? And guys are like, I've caught 4 or 5 fish on Krakens and I haven't replaced the skirt. And I was like, I told you they don't tear the skirts up hardly ever. They head shoot the thing, right? So you get a lot of versatility. I would say the only thing with the grub tails and the paddle tails, I mean, you're not going to just like interchange them without gluing them on. If you're going to take them on and off, you know, you can use a little bit of adhesive or a little bit of this. But, you know, once you get it dialed in, just glue it on exactly how you want it and keep her on there. If you're really exploring and you're like, okay, I want to try all these in one day, a clear zip tie, okay? You can zip tie the skirt to the body with a tiny little zip tie.
Okay.
Instead of gluing them on, and then, you know, that might be podunk to some, but for me, I'm like, okay, I want to fish this like a tube, but I want to take that tube skirt off and maybe later I want to fish it like a paddle tail. Well, you just clip the zip tie and you have no adhesive, so you're not tearing those skirts up.
Then you can do the tube skirt boogie.
Right. Then you can do the tube skirt boogie anyway. Steve Arino says, when trolling and you get a fish on, do you kill the engine, keep going and forward, or put in neutral, assuming two poles in the water? What I typically do is I scream at Jay to put the effing boat in reverse. Put the boat, remember that?
You had a super hog on, Steve.
I had a Northwood.
You're excited.
I had a Northwood super hog on. Thought it was in neutral. What I want to do is I want to have the strike, acknowledge the strike, and then put it in neutral, right?
Do you give it a surge? Or is it dependent on the rod band?
Well, that's where I'm going.
Okay, go ahead.
That would be at my average trolling speeds, 3s to 5s, right?
Yeah, okay.
He's got it. You got it hooked up. Sub 3, I'm going to surge.
Mm-hmm.
He could grab the bait, and now I need to move it and get hook penetration. So, you know, 3 miles an hour down, I'm going, boom, surge the thing forward, right? Force the boat forward. That's going to ensure some hook penetration into neutral, right?
Yep.
Now, I always leave the boat on. I don't kill it, right? Something I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years, I think, I always troll with my trolling motor down. Okay? I think. Maybe in some videos I haven't, but I try to. Don't crucify me if I...
Well, in episode 36, I noted at the 2-minute mark, your trolling motor went down.
Whatever. If I've got a big spread out, you're saying 2 poles, not a problem. You know, it's not uncommon for me, 6, 8 rods, whatever I can get out there, you know, 220, 221, whatever it takes. I'm going to have my trolling motor down. So I get the fish, the client's got the fish, I can hit the trolling motor in like 2, like a real low speed to at least keep the boat's trajectory going the same way so we don't get the fish and then I have like the biggest cluster of all time, right? Something I'll say is this is how we turn. So once I've gotten the fish and I know I've got a good hookup, say we're going 3.5, right, Jay? 3.5 to 4. If the fish hits, I want to turn into the fish, not away from the fish.
Correct.
Right? So don't like he hits and you turn the boat. Say the fish hits on your port side, right? I don't want to turn to starboard and then put in neutral. I just want to like make sure he's hooked up and then turn into it because your boat's going to slow and drift, right? You're not going to come to a dead stop unless like the waves you're going into oncoming waves. So I try to turn into them after I know I've got a good hookup and leave it in neutral. I've seen guys in the past, you know, they'll keep the boat in gear or in a lower gear, and that's fine. I usually don't. I'm not looking to run ashore, you know.
Yeah, so, I'm sure they're thinking keeping the line straight. This is multiple line people probably in that.
Yeah,
instance.
Two rods. Now. Yeah, throw it in neutral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you got two pumps out of him, throw it in neutral. Right. And if you're below those average speeds, you know, gun it up. You hit him. That's kind of your hook set. Juicing for a second. Later, I go. That's all it takes. Right. I've set the hook with the boat. And those slower speed scenarios, at least driven at home. I can't think of surging the boat in slow speed trolling where I've like not gotten the fish. Right. So that's something to keep in mind. But yeah. Put it in neutral. I like to have the engine still on in case we drift into the shore or something stupid. So you got that down. Preferably sure. Have the trolling motor down. If you've got a serious spread going above two lines, having the trolling motor down to just keep that thing going straight, you know, is pretty important. So you don't, you know, victory followed by like the biggest mess of baits you've ever seen in your life, which it doesn't matter. That's one thing too. I see it with clients all the time. They're always like shocked how unfazed I am when things go wrong trolling, you know? And fishing as much timber and rocky cover as I do, baits will bang and then they go sideways. They come up on their side. You know, things happen and they'll foul up three baits and I go, oh, hold on. Put the boat in forward and just leave it on. And then, you know, cut them out, start fresh. Takes 5 minutes and you're right back in the game. Don't let it beat you down. People are like, oh, I fouled my rods. Man, who cares?
Yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah.
It's like
part of it.
It's like picking weeds off.
Yeah.
Like if you get frustrated, I've been fished with guys like, frickin' weeds. What did you expect? We're throwing blades at weeds, dude. You know, don't get mad at it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's like going to Chuck E. Cheese and bitching the place smells like pizza and rats. Their logo's a rat and they make pizza, Jay. What are you going to do?
Huh.
Don't be shocked.
No.
Jay, most people don't know this. Jay, in his younger years, played in the house band at Chuck E. Cheese.
What was the band's name?
Shit, I can't remember.
I can't either.
I'm going to Google that real quick.
Okay, yep, check it out.
Chuck E. Cheese band name.
Played a lot of bands.
Okay. Munch's make-believe band. Cheese, Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz Pizza, known as Munch's Make Believe Band. Jay, weren't you on? Were you on sax in that band? I believe
alto sax. Yeah.
Gotcha. Oh my goodness. Anyway, yeah. Guys, you can. Yeah. Jay ate a lot of pizza in the '80s and.
Jay Bird and the Monsters.
Jay Bird and the Monsters. They used to let him sleep in the rat costume during the winter because it got cold. Freaking you, man. Think about that. You're going to your 10th birthday party. Let's take the kids to the place with the singing gorilla and the rat that sells pizza. So
Yeah, he's kind of warped if you look at it
that way.
That's
what you wanted to do. You wanted to touch dirty art.
You
wanted
to go there, Junior.
You want to go down there with that rat selling pizza and they got that singing monkey in the disco jacket? Come on, you little shit. Whew. Your dad got lit up on 6 pictures of Bud Heavy and Jay played in the ball pit. Oh, good times, he said.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Whatever, sorry. Ronnie, I'm having issues keeping muskies. Did I answer this last week? Guy having issues keeping muskies hooked on glide baits? Don't recall.
I don't think so.
If we did, we'll do it again. I like the topic. Having issues keeping muskies hooked on glide baits. I haven't landed a fish on it yet, other than a big walleye. I'm using a 6-inch hellhound, having great success getting fish to eat, but can't seem to keep the hooks in them. Using an 8-foot heavy rod, carotid reel, 80-pound braid, 100 fluoroleader. Sharpen the hooks, then sharpen again. I just started this season with gliders, not using them in the past. Also ordered straight wire leaders. Maybe this will help. Any tips for hook sets, keeping fish pinned on gliders? Okay. Generally, when a muskie hits a glider, they hit her pretty good, right? They'll headshot it pretty good. Depend it, and you got to think about this. This is why gliders are tricky. If I'm gliding, now, speaking of playing in bands, Jay, what stage were you on, right? Were you stage left or stage right in the Chuck E. Cheese band? What I'm getting at is we call it a stage. You've been to a concert at some point. When you look at a stage, they call it stage left or stage right, the orientation.
Right. Yeah, that's an orientation of the musician, right. looking at the stage. Both to answer your question, and I can't remember, but I believe I was stage left.
Well, I'm deaf. I'm
with the monsters.
Right. I'm 80% deaf in my right ear, so I was always stage left. But anyway. Think about this on gliders. They go left and then they go right.
Yeah.
Which direction is your hook set, my dudes? You've got to. This is a ninja secret, and I'm just going to tell you. Your hook set has to be working with the direction of the glide bait when it hits, when the fish hits. If you're like me, I'm a left-handed angler. So my rod is orientated to the left side of my body. So I hold the rod in my right hand. I'm turning the handle with my left. If my glide bait is going towards the right, stage right, if you will, right, and the fish hits, I'm pulling the hooks backwards in some capacity. Ah, that one hit you, Jay.
I wasn't listening. What?
Jay was. You were reminiscing about all the free pizza you had back in the day.
Oh man!
Get the rat suit, boy. Get the rat suit. It's cold out. Anyway.
Yeah.
If you think about that.
Yeah.
In my left-handedness, if a muskie hits, and the bait is pointed to the right, stage right, I'm looking dead at my bait. It went to my left, and then it went to my right, and he T-bones it when it's going to the right and it's setting sideways. When I set to the left, I'm pulling the hooks backwards. Right? You have to respond commensurate to which way the hooks work. I always say this when people get snags. Hooks only work in one direction. Right? The easiest way to get a snag out is get behind it and pull it out. Because when you apply force in the wrong way, guess what? It comes out. You have to be ready to set the hook. Now, this is an interesting factoid. An advantage of fishing shorter rods with glide baits was that. Nines, 9.6s, all these long rods, I'm seeing it more and more, and I see it in my own fishing, that If the hooks are pointed one direction, yeah, you could theoretically flip it up and get him in the jaw or something of that nature. And it happens, and I'll catch them when the bait was pointed to the right and I set to the other direction. Right? But when we had short rods and we were fishing reef hogs and things of that nature, you kind of set more up, right? So try to set counter to which way the bait was going. So if it's to the left, I'm in great shape, right? So if the bait, if the bait zigzags to the stage left, which is on my dominant side where the rod tip is pointed, I got him. If I'm the other direction, I'm pulling the hooks backwards. So you've got to be
potentially playing. I mean, it all makes sense. Yeah.
Well, you're not getting the same amount of force. Yeah, you're pulling. So the bait is on the leader and it's setting the wrong direction. You're pulling it up more than you're pulling it to the side, if you think about it, right? So we're out in the cast. He hits when it's pointed to the right on the pause. Not only do we have a tedium of slack in the line, which we pulled out, he's T-boned it. He's got a hold of it. You're pulling it up and to the side, preferably to the side, which is actually driving the bait more up and out. And I've watched it happen in Muskie's mouth. And it took me forever to realize, holy shit, I need to think about how I'm setting the hook on these things when it's on my offhand side. So every time it goes to your offhand side, it's a liability. Right? Bait's to the left, I'm good. Bait's to the right, left, I'm good. Off, Now, with that being said, when I have a fish follow in on glide bait, guess what I do? I'll go, all right, there he is. Bam, 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 bam. Quick right, boom, and let it set on my dominant hand. My pauses are always to the left. So I don't do extended pauses until the bait is pointed towards my dominant hand, which means my hook set has the highest potential to land the fish.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Ninja secret right there. Can't believe I gave that one up. I shouldn't have. So when I pause, and guys that are glide bait aficionados, you know and I know, they hit on the pause far more than on the retrieve, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Position yourself the best way you can. So if you're a right-handed angler, it's the opposite. You know, I'm sitting here, and the rod is in your left hand, and it's pointed to the right aspect of your body. You know, the bait goes right, left, right is when you pause. Left, right, pause. Pause it on your dominant hand side, so when he hits it and T-bones it, boom, your hook set is translated to the best possible way, opposed to it being an offhand hook set where the hooks have to roll up and in. Anyway, whatever. Or shoot them, Jay. That's your other option. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, are you saying the first half of the cast when you really can't visually see the bait?
Oh, bullshit.
That you can be... What?
You can... Okay, bait hits, right? Think about this. So, glide baits. When say, let's just take it down to one of my favorite glide baits, and I've gone from... And I've had wonderful success with Lynchums and Shums and Manta. I come back around, I just keep throwing Hellhounds, right? I just do. So, a Hellhound or a Phantom, it hits. What I try to do is when it hits the water, I'll pop it so I know which way it's going. And I don't go 1, 2, 3 pause. I go left, right, right. You see what I'm saying? Left, right, pause. A lot of guys count their snaps. 1, 2, 3 pause. 1, 2, 3, 4 pause. I go, all right, the bait hit the water. It's going to the right the first time. Maybe, right? As long as I see it and I keep it high in the water column, even if you let it fall. So the bait hits the water, pop it so you know which way it's going, and now remember which way it's going.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if it goes to the right first, I go right, left, whatever, right? Mix it up. Try to keep an eye on that so I'm, you know, always in sync with the direction of the bait so that I'm pausing on my dominant hand for the hook set.
Cool.
Yeah. And now, if we're fishing in appropriate conditions that are really good for glide baits, Jay, guess what they typically are?
What's that?
Flat and sunny and calm. We need to get down and dirty, right? So it's easy to do.
So it's a little bit easier to visualize. Right. Yeah. Right.
And like I said, you're going to have to figure out it hits the water. Which way did it go? Usually you can just see it in your line.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You can tell in your line. You could put me on a glide bait and I can tell you which way it's going. Like just hand me Jay. Let's say theoretically Jay made a cast and handed me a glide bait So you make the cast and stick your rod in my hand, right? In two works of that bait, two pumps of that rod, I can tell you which way it's going.
Yeah, and how far it's gliding, too.
Right.
Sure.
Get in tune with that. And it's not some dramatic whoosh, whoosh, like your line's not slicing left or right. But your hook sets, you will be far better off. The other thing I'll say is this, hit them hard and hit them fast. If we're fishing glide baits, when we should be fishing them, for typically colder water or negative or neutral fish, right? They're going to hit them and they're not going to hold on for dear life a lot of times. So that hit comes and you turn into them. We're talking about reels. I love fishing slow, but if I'm fishing glide baits, I'm barely using my reeling hand, but I have a quicker pickup reel to pick up that slack when I need to and hammer them. Like, zoop, bam, I'm into him. Yeah, all in
some,
one motion.
Some of those have big bodies. I mean, you got to move the body of the bait. It's not like a bucktail that slides a lot easier, you know?
Well, we're dealing with wood baits or resin baits, right? So, I mean, or hard plastic, but, you know, they hit them, they T-bone them. If you think I just grab them sitting here inches, I can reach my arm out during the podcast and grab glide baits that are all near me here. You know, a little 6-inch phantom, about any fish, he T-bones that, it's no big deal. But say a 7-inch soft tail, right? You need to move some body. You need to get that hook penetration and get it driven in there, especially wooden baits or epoxy baits. I feel like, and I don't know, I mean, this is just down the rabbit hole, but hard plastic baits seem to move better through teeth because the finish is basically like a really thin layer opposed to epoxy baits. I've pulled teeth out of muskies.
Which are stickier. Yeah,
stickier.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. and we're down the rabbit hole here. But epoxied baits tend to, like a Hellhound, excuse me, it's not Hellhound, but a Hot Tails or like a Lynchum or some of the cool stuff we've got at the muskie shop. They're great baits, but it's a thicker clear coat. So it's like, okay, wow, why's my bait all screwed? Oh, there's a tooth sticking out of it when I bring it in, right? Yeah, I got drilled and I just didn't move enough, but I broke his tooth off, right? A little tooth fragment or something like that. I've had it happen, you know, 3-4 times over the years where the harder plastic baits seem to not be as sticky. And like you said, Jay, thank you for that adjective because I didn't want to say that, but that's kind of how it feels. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I have Hellhounds where they look like they've just nailed, like Freddy Krueger'd nails on a chalkboard, where my higher end glide baits don't have the scratching to them because they don't slide as well through the teeth.
Yeah, some of them have 4 or 5 coats of that thick epoxy to protect the wood, you know, protect the paint job underneath the wood.
And it's not a negative or positive, just an observation.
No, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. Like I said, when you look at the physics of how a hook works, buddy, if you're pulling it backwards into the side, essentially, if he T-boned it going the opposite direction you're setting, you got to pull it all the way across his mouth. Or up and in.
Sure.
It's grim. Consider which way that thing's going and always pause on the side that makes sense with setting hooks. Cliff, I fish Metro Waters in Minnesota. The current craze is stagger blades. How long will these be effective and what would be the smartest thing to throw since everyone else is throwing staggers? Jay, how much longer do they have, Jay? I'm looking here on my watch. Is it minutes? Is it hours? Is it months?
Come on now. You know, MEPS giant killers have always worked. MEPS musky killers have always worked.
Mm-hmm.
What's the big dip, you know, deal with putting two different... These are just combinations, you know, and right. It's just like they all put out different... Mm-hmm. I don't know. I put some... I did some underwater stuff of some different bucktails recently that really boosted the volume underneath the water. Some of them are quite noisy, quite clacky. You could actually hear the vibration in the whole body of
feel
the bait
the vibration.
With the offset.
Right.
You can feel it if you turn it up loud enough.
It's like
pretty cool.
Like Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Is that the ticket that is driving fish insane? It could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, when Double Tens came out, there was something about sonically, obviously, that worked, and they still work.
Right.
You know, right time, right place. You know, the waters around here aren't probably perfect as much as a lot of Canadian waters and a lot of Minnesota waters that are, double tens are just, they still crush fish on them.
Yeah.
But, people are just trying something different. You know, the different manufacturers like your Frenzies and Mayhems and Esox Assault and just about everybody is offering some kind of stagger.
Hooked on musky baits. And the thing here's again, I'm just in a mood, Jay. Just in a mood.
Right.
Okay. Number one, giant caveat here. I spend as little time as possible on highly pressured waterways. Right? Not my cup of tea. I don't enjoy it. If you live in the metro, and like Dr. Bob was up in that area, and we've talked about it before, this is what I got, right? If I want to go out for 4 hours or 5 hours, guess what? This is what I have to fish, right? Yeah, he can trailer or whatever. So if you're relegated to things you're seeing pressure, and people seem to be tearing fish up on it, there's some credence to it. Now, there's confirmation bias of guess what, Jay? If you throw nothing but 8-9 staggers all year long, guess what you're going to catch all your fish on?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Now, here's a thought. What does a stagger blade combination do, Jay? Young Padawan.
I would say it's some type of offset in the center balance of the whole bait.
Well, creating what? You're talking
different
about
vibration.
Different vibration, right? And a regular vibration. Well, what do we do when 99.9% of musk anglers throw a bucktail? What do? They throw it out and they turn the handle fast, number one, right? Most everybody
quite
burns
often.
Too sure. fast and in a regular way. When I've had fish that have come in spooky, let's say I've got, the last time I did this in earnest would have been, double booker eights, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Brought a nice one in as 41 or 42, somewhere in that ballpark, whatever. Good fish. On Eagle River chain, right? Here's this fish. It's seen 400 bucktails before. You could just tell. It was just didn't want to do it. It was like it was into it, but didn't want to do it. Well, how can we make our vibration irregular and different feeling from everybody else? Surging. Once you have a feel for a bucktail, you know the limitations of how fast and slow you can retrieve it. So bucktail blades, they open up, right? That's something we're all aware of. They open up at speed. They open and they close. They're on clevises, which are those little round horseshoes that they reside on. They allow the blades to free swing. The faster that you're going, the more they open up. The slower you're going, the more they lay back. If you play with that and you surge out, and just mean real, real, if you're irregularly fishing a bucktail, how the blades are running is changing the vibration the entire time. Right?
Yeah.
So what they've done with these blades, in my opinion, for what it's worth, these stagger blades have come up with a way to force a regular vibration for the average angler. Right? So it's kicking around a little bit more. It's uneven. It's kind of this off-kilter thing. So the muskies have seen 999 bucktails this year that are all going in a very even keel thing, right? Yeah. Now, on a cast, we must admit that the speed is increasing at all times. If you reel a reel evenly, because the nature of a spool, the spool of line is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, regardless if you turn the handle in a very even fashion, if you turn it mechanically at a set RPM, no matter what, the speed, the spool gathering line is going faster and faster and faster and faster. Actually, again, referencing Dr. Bob, he did an article. If you've not seen this, to understand and calculate your reeling speed, it's on the app. It's phenomenal. And he actually came up with an equation for this. But if you're reeling in an even manner, your blades are still speeding up, but there's nothing tremendously irregular about that over the course of, say, 4 or 5 reel turns, right? So from the landing point, from the second that they start in the water to the time that they end up at the rod tip is a different speed at an even reeling point, but there's been nothing highly irregular about it, right? There's been a pretty consistent vibration. Stagger blades are this lopsided thing that instead of this even conical kind of vibration coming off of them, they're slightly more erratic. So what they've done is they've made a bucktail that makes a neophyte weekend angler have a more erratic bucktail retrieve. So to me, it doesn't matter what the blade combo is. If fish need an erratic bucktail retrieve, it's all in the hand. Bucktail fishing is the one thing I talk, I hem and haw about one thing all the time. Stop using your reeling hand, right? When it comes to rubber baits, diving rise baits, twitch baits, everything, stop reeling, right? Bucktails are the complete opposite. Everything's dependent on your reeling hand, right? And Jay, it's almost like we wrote it, but we never think about things ahead. We're talking about reels early, and he said, what handle you prefer, right? Power handle, paddle handle. I want a handle, in my opinion, that translates as much vibration and a rod that translates as much vibration as possible, right? And so with the power handles have typically had, if you look at most of the reels I throw that I use all the time, they have a hard handle. I don't like the EVA foam if I can avoid it, right? Like the Daiwa has it, that's fine. I'm ripping rubber. If I'm throwing blades,
it's absorbing vibration. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, rubber paddle handles absorb vibration. I don't need shock. Think about this. All this crap in fishing, shock absorbing. That's vibration dampening. All right? Comfort grip, vibration dampening. How do you know what your bait's doing? Comfy rubber grip. Okay, so the grip of this rod is going to negate the feel and sensitivity of the rod I just paid money for. Fantastic. Because I'm such a dainty, dainty freaking princess, I can't handle some shaking in my hand. You know, go fish crappie, you lose bag. You know, I've got a, No, I want to feel it. I want to understand what's happening, right? The more in tune you are with that, the more you know how to play with things. I am the most boring guy when it comes to bait selection. I am so ardent about this is the running depth we're running. This is where we need to be at. I'm going to throw this all day long. I'm going to make it work, right? Because I understand where the fish are and I need to trigger them. That's phase two. Most people are really struggling with phase one. Where are the muskies? Phase two, and what presentation speed and what vibrational profile is the next hard part. But I want to have a rod and reel that translate as much vibration. And then when we're reeling in bucktails, it's not, we're just talking about left, right, left, right, left, right, right? All that. And I'm sure there's somebody in their car listening this morning going, holy crap. But you think about how the bait, that you pulled her backwards and upside down. Right? You're going to be better that way. The same thing with bucktails. I want my rod pointed at that blade with the slightest bit of tick bend in my rod, right? So Booker had a really good tip long ago, and I've stole it from him. If you're pulling double tens, to pull them with the reel, not with the rod, right? So point it right at. I prefer to point my bucktail at my rod at a bucktail and lift just enough where I feel the vibration coming down the rod translate into my hand and hopefully into the handle where I'm comfortable enough that I can slow her down, speed her up a bunch, slow her down, and I'm pulsating the skirt and the blades the entire time, right? In doing that, forget stagger blades. I'm doing something 99.9% of guys are not doing with bucktails. It doesn't matter what bucktail I have. Go get your Meps Giant Kill or your Eagle Tail back from the Stone Ages out, and you'll kick more ass than these guys that buy 400 stagger blades. Who gives a shit? The fish doesn't. He's responding to, I think, on pressure waters, the fish responding to a more irregular retrieve because they're definitely conditioned. And Metro Minnesota is not my area of expertise. That's why I defer to Dr. Bob, who has conveyed to me numerous times, those fish, they want it right, they want it perfect, and they want something different after they've been bludgeoned with stuff for years, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you're fishing bucktails to their utmost level of ability, you're doing something so different, nobody else will get it. You see what I'm saying? I don't need stagger blades because who gives a shit?
Out of the handful, maybe several fish I've caught in the last couple seasons on bucktails, I can't think of one that didn't come after a surge, mm-hmm. whether it was in the cast or the figure eight.
You look at something as boring. Let's demystify bucktails a little bit more here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most boring to people. Every muskie's seen it. Booker 700, right? How sure. Boring. I'll take it any day of the week.
Single fluted number 7 blade.
Right.
Bucktail.
Every muskie seen one on the Eagle River and the Three Lakes chain. I watched Joe Booker smack so many fish. Do you know why he doesn't turn? He's fishing exactly the way I'm telling you. He's got a feel for what's happening with that blade at all times. He can surge it and slow it ad nauseum with no fear of it collapsing. Ever.
Right, right.
Do you know
that's
what happens?
Dialed in with
that's
the bucktail.
Well, yeah. And that's called dialed in with a bucktail, which is erratic as hell, way more erratic than Ricky's. You know, here's Ricky's stagger blade. He's got a 400 and a 12, right? And we keep buying into this stagger blade crap. I'll take you to the mat, anybody. If you want to take that bet, it's not the blade combo, it's how you fish them, right? Now, the way everybody fishes them is throw it out, turn the handle. They're terrified if the blade stop, the muskies won't hit, but they're not dialed in enough to be confident in what's happening with that at any given moment. You've not played around enough with it. The more you observe a bait and you understand it, which is also too why I'm a creature of habit. Right now with spinner baits, it's self-serving, but I the only thing you're going to see me picking up is the Steve's meat grinder and the Steve's tailgater, right? Spent the last 2 years with them. I know exactly what they're going to, I can't say exactly ever. Sorry, I apologize, folks, but I know exactly what they're going to do at any given moment, right? How slow can I take that bait? How fast can I take that bait? Most guys strap on a bait and go, I don't know, I'm just turning the handle. Well, when does it blow out? When does it roll over? When does it do something weird? You know, what's too fast for that bait? What's too slow for that bait?
Yep, when does for it, spinner baits, yeah. Right, that's right.
Or on. A bucktail. There's a speed that's too slow for a giant killer, right? And there's a speed where it becomes a buzz bait and it's running too high. There's also a think about this. There's a speed for something like a giant killer that's so fast that the blade cannot grip into the water and now you're just dragging across the surface. They have tolerances. Every bait has a tolerance from too slow to too fast, right? If you take, say, like a slammer, fatty minnow, love that bait. There's a certain point, I'm not doing this, but I'm just saying, there's a certain point, if you reel it too slow, it does nothing. It just kind of drags forward, right? We're talking you're barely turning it. Okay, it's doing nothing. And there's a point where it's so fast it blows out on its side. If you're a troller, you know exactly what I'm talking about, where you'll go so fast with a trolling bait, it can't do it. It can't dig anymore and ends up on its side. Every casting bait that you have in your box, if you don't understand what its tolerances are, you don't understand what its whole range of application is. So stop buying baits and learn what the baits you already have can do. That is not endorsed by the muskie shop. They'd probably get mad if I said that. But you know what I'm saying, Jay? It's like, there's so much there opposed to, I've got this, I've bought my new bucktail from Lucky's Bucktail, and they say it's Lucky. Lucky assures it himself, right? Comes with his Lucky's face and signatures on the bucktail and says, get lucky with Lucky's Bucktails. Because it's this weird combo that's hot on Succabagama. No, it's application. And so learning how to master each bait that you have. Oh, I just said that. But learning how to really master all the elements of every bait that you have and understand what its tolerances are. Now you can make them do whatever you want to do, where I don't need a stagger blade. I just go, okay, I know. Meps double eights, like the back of my hand, right? Those are my favorite bucktails. Or a single, when I go to a single blade, it's the Booger 700. Okay, I know it. That's where I'm at. Okay, how much weight can you add to the bucktails you own? Do you know that? There's a certain amount of weight you can add to a bucktail before it won't run. Do you have a guess? Do you know that about what's in your tackle box or not?
Right.
You see where I'm getting at? It's like, unlock all the possibilities that you already have and look at it from that regard, where everybody else is going to throw it out and turn the handle, and they're going to get lucky, and they're going to go, well, my metric for success was we fished for 5 days and we caught 2 fish, and all of that is bestowed upon this wonderful stagger blade design, where we finally dumbed into some fish that were shallow. We fished shallow the entire time, and we did this the same way the entire time, and finally the fish and our what we wanted to do and what the fish were doing finally lined up, you know. Anyway, wow. Rabbit hole, Jay. Dan, what?
Wouldn't that go ahead?
No, you got it.
Well, I was thinking it would be really interesting if a guy were to take like his three most productive or three favorite baits generally that you're running for muskies, and it's just like really getting in tune with those, knowing the limitations of them.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about what's minimum, what's maximum speed, adding weight, you know.
Yeah.
Figure eighting.
Yeah.
That's another thing. You know, there's certain things you can do. Bucktails are pretty easy,
okay.
You know, granted, but, you know, with crankbaits and stuff, glide baits, plastics, of course, those get tricky, and there's intricate little things you can and can't do when you figure eight. Know exactly what that thing's going to do at different speeds, figure eighting it, how much line you need out.
Will
you
it know, roll over in a figure it, eight? Yeah.
Will it roll over? Absolutely.
Which is...
You get that stuff down on your three favorite or your three best baits, you will fish more productively.
Dude, we've never really unpacked it this way, but it's true as hell. And the number one question I get asked by folks that end up on my boat, and we get comfy and they start asking stuff. Does Joe really only fish his own baits? Yes, because he not because he made them, because he's obviously incentivized to not fish anything else, right? Period. So Joe has devised every way possible to make what's in his product lineup when he was filming for TV. Joe's kind of pseudo-retired now, just hanging out and doing what he wants to do. But he was incentivized to maximize his product lineup. Right? So he couldn't go and grab... perfect example. And there was one time, where there was a podcast one time, I could taste it in the air. He wanted to say a Suic, right?
Uh-huh.
I remember this years back. Actually, somebody wrote an email too about it. And we were talking about like this fall pattern. And he said, you know, when that's happening, I'll go for something that plunges and comes up. And then he started talking about the Mag Shallow Raider and how he put sinkers on it, right? Well, at that point, he had to understand he could basically turn a Mag Shallow Raider with added weight and basically a pseudo dive and rise, because he didn't have a dive and rise in his lineup. Now, that's an extreme case, but Joe fished his product lineup to the maximum efficiency because he knew it inside and out. Obviously, he had designed it, but he was relegated. He was in a box. Or you look at Chaz Martin. I don't believe, last time I talked to Chaz, it's been a minute, but Chaz and me are cool, and I don't think he's fishing anything else, but Chaz maximizes that lineup because he can get it done with what he has. It's not about augmentation. It's kind of interesting, like putting yourself in that box. I've been on Joe's boat enough to go, all right, we have the Joe Booker lineup. That's what we have. There's no running to the tackle store and buying this, that, or the other. How do we make this work? Now, do I like that feeling? No, because there's days I've eaten my own arm off to have a glide bait, right? Or there's days I'd like to have this, that, and the other. However, it kind of forces your brain to focus more on the retrieve than what the bait is itself. So you learn all the intrinsic properties of this bait, and you know what it will do and what it don't. If you don't know what a tool is capable of, how can you use it? Right? Okay. Give a caveman a hammer. He's going to pound a rock with probably the claw side like a moron, right? But it's observational. It's not exciting, but spending time with that, what will it do? How fast will it run? There's certain, you know, with the Titan, you can rip it as hard as you want, and it'll go down, you know, but there's too soft for a Titan. Oh, it won't go down because you just went, you breathed on the rod. Mm-hmm. Every bait has a tolerance. Once you understand the tolerances, highest speed, lowest speed, what does in between do? How much weight can I add before it screws it up? How much weight can I subtract before it screws it up? If I change the hooks, what does it do? Being observational of what the bait's tolerances are, it's its limitations, is as important as just going and buying a new bait. Period. Anyway. Whatever. Dan. I struggle with boat control on my John boat. Any tips? I have a foot pedal motor, but no outboard. Nailed it already, Jay. He's got a foot pedal trolling motor, but no outboard, which means he has no what, Jay? Keel in the back of the boat.
Yeah, and the boat itself doesn't have a keel if it's a John boat.
Right.
Those things flat in the back. They'll spin around on you. It's very hard to control. You're going into the wind with that, you know, if it's a bow mount trolling motor, that's mm-hmm. one thing. But yeah, if you're going downwind at all or crosswind.
He's got a foot pedal.
It's an art form.
Probably in the front. Devise some kind of keel system that will slow your boats, especially say we're going down an edge and the wind's blowing, say, into your starboard side and you're spinning or you're doing this stuff and you're trying to move forward. A keel will slow that the way the boat will turn side to side, right? So, guys that, you know, I have an outboard on their boats. You know, even if you have your boat, say you have your outboard trimmed all the way up, your boat control is completely different. A little trick I'll tell you, Jay, is if you're in, say, you're in your Ranger, you're low like me or whatever, and you're having difficulty keeping your boat straight, so you got a buddy in the back of the boat or whatever, especially guiding, I don't want the boat pitched in all screwy all the time. I'll make adjustments to how my wheel is positioned, how my outboard is actually positioned in the water to compensate.
Sure.
So, Dan, you need some kind of keel system on the back of your boat. Excuse me. I've seen some podunk stuff as simple as this is West Virginia stuff here. You know, making a keel, you know, it's like a 2-foot keel that they're mounting in the back of the boat with C-clamps out of like plywood and epoxy.
Don't say it out of a milk jug, please.
That's how we jug line, Jay.
I messed it up.
Don't disrespect the ancient methods of jugging. Next week's episode's jugging for muskies. You know, but anyway, yeah, some kind of keel system will help you out. There's tons of cool things. Like, I've gone down the rabbit hole before online of like all these, they call them tiny boat mods or John boat mods. There'll be some tips and tricks on there, but yeah, I would make a keel out of wood or aluminum or whatever you get your hands on and make it where it's modular. You can clamp it on the back of the boat and that will help you tremendously because essentially you got this subsurface resistance, right? So the boat might be blowing, which is a little teacup in a storm, but that keel is going to grab more water and it'll keep your boat positioned way better for you. Sean, love the... Hold on. Oh, hey, Sean. I was trying to. It was just a weird typo. Love the podcast. Meow. Meow, Jay.
Meow.
FYI, your books really helped me up my game. Excited to start this year with all the new concepts. What do you say is the most important thing to focus on during the early season? The old tropes. Quickly here. Warmest part of the lake. Small presentations. If they're not there, getting out into open water and trolling the first break, right? Not being afraid to add rubber into that, like medium-sized rubber, and really understanding how your shallow zones. Everybody's going to fish shallower than you. How do these shallow zones connect to the outlying structure we get around it? Jay, anything else you'd add for early part of the year?
Slow down.
Yeah, no joke. Petrie, I love show. Hold on. I love show I pick. I fish pike in Russia.
Oh.
So he spelled R-O-S-S. He's Russian. Thank you for listening, Petrie. But your talk helps. I've never owned a bucktail. Are they good for pike?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Very cool. We get some Euro listeners, and I actually met one. Jay, it was crazy when I was filming the Big Netherlands pike video. Met a guy in Amsterdam, and he brought me Stroop waffle and local Pepsis. And Petrie's fishing for pike in Russia. Now, you guys might not believe this, but I learned it last year when I was in Hungary, Jay. We literally had a distributor, a guy that sells tackle, had never seen a bucktail, right? That is totally a North American thing right now. I think Savage Gear is going to open that up a little bit. Petrie, I would recommend checking out the Savage Gear stuff. You could probably get your hands on that pretty quickly. Obviously, you could order from the Muskie shop. Pike love small bucktails. 700 series spinner baits, 500 series booker tails, catch the crap out of them. The little Esox assault with a single weight, the MEPS or a MEPS
bright
giant
stuff,
killer.
Fire tiger. Yeah. Orange chartreuse. Stuff. Yeah. They seem to love that. Probably
throw
in
it
Russia
out
too.
Hey, we were talking about bucktails earlier. Throw it out, turn the handle, keep it erratic, but definitely. I don't think Russian pike are going to snub their nose to a bucktail, Jay. You probably tear them up if they've never seen them.
That could be devastating over there.
You could be
they get some huge fish, too.
Oh, they do. That's a whole other thing. But thanks for listening. That's fantastic. Next, Brad. Yo, retards. Thanks. Whoa. Hey, hello. Way to make an entrance, Brad. We don't say the R word anymore. Jay's mom gets mad when you point the obvious out about him. Ooh. Anyway, I need tips for trolling bucktails, mainly single and double blades. How do I hit my desired depths easily? And how do I stop line roll? Love the show. Okay, your desired depths, wait. Lead in front of it. I think it's a combo answer, though, Jay, in some regard, because stopping line control or line roll is about a big swivel. You don't want to troll bucktails on anything that doesn't have a swivel, right? Because the faster you go, if it's not a big quality swivel, the swivel will grab and the bucktail will start spinning your line. When you spin the line up, obviously it shortens the line. I don't know how much, but, you know.
Ask Bob,
what is the compression of line at 100 feet with a bucktail roll? Of, right, you roll your line up. But if you guys
now he's got his computer out.
According to my figures. Anyway, if you take this line and you roll it in your fingers, that's what happens with a bucktail. So if you take a piece of line, hold it, and you say your left hand and start rolling it with your right hand, it'll spin up, okay? So we need a big swivel that can handle the job of trolling blades. If he's saying primarily eights, you know, or even bigger, I like the big ones, the 36-inch Muskie Shop Fluoro. That's a great leader. Booker makes stuff that have big crane-style swivels on them, right? I don't want the cheapo swivels. They seem to bind more. So make sure your swivels are in good order for your bucktail trolling. Clip-on weights, inline weights. I think another thing is this. When I'm trolling bucktails, I want long leaders so I can put rubber core on them way up close to the swivel, right? So it's not problematic. So it can vary so wildly. What is your target depth is a question. If you need to hit 10 feet down with a bucktail, and we went the shortest amount of line out, 4 ounces of lead. I told Jay on the phone this week, dude, I've had crazy conditions and bad conditions. I popped a fish with 4 ounces of lead in front of a freaking meat grinder this week. Basically, I was dredging.
That's a lot of weight.
That's a lot of weight. But, okay, I could put 1 ounce on and have 100 feet of line. I could put 4 ounces on and have, like, 30, you know, better boat control, and I know where the bait's at. So, hey, I need to speed it up and make it do this over this piece of structure or whatever that might look like. So, yeah, lead, lots of it. The shorter, the better seems to be the best in my case. Anyway, Jay, we've covered the heck out of some stupid stuff this evening. Sorry about the glide bait rabbit hole and all the rabbit holes. But anyway, Jay Bird, it's Memorial Day. Yeah. To celebrate the sacrifice people have made, people have gone jet skiing and motorboating. I think that's the spirit of the holiday. That and hot dogs, correct? That was the whole intent here.
Hot dogs and hamburgers.
Get your wieners now. Anyway, Jay Bird, say good night.
Night, guys.
Later.
Thank you. Hot dogs and hamburgers.